Before we dive in, I want to share something with you. Now, these are brands I actually use in my own life. They aren't sponsors yet, but I believe in what they represent. If you're the kind of person who listens to T-Pow Labs or The Picture of Wealth, chances are you're already dialed into a few of these. But in case you're not, I have a few creative brand mentions. Seilu Spa Arctic Ice Cold Plunge. Now, the best decisions are made outside your comfort zone. And I can tell you from experience, that's why I keep my cold plunge in my routine. A few minutes each week. Again, I'm not an everyday guy, but a couple times a week in the ice bath makes me sharper, clearer, and ready to roll. So we're going to fast forward because I know today the listenership is coachable, you know, achieving things, setting things, wanting to set certain markers, maybe higher or maybe setting them different. The setting the bar higher might look different than a traditional want to make better numbers, want to do more work, make more money, sell more things, or create a status bump up. So you are coaching professionals and business owners currently and have, you know, had a successful exit from a business, took some time off, retooled, and are back. And I love stories. So I would love if you can share in the space you're working in now, what is sort of the most common aha people are having in the business owners that you're coaching, that you're working with? I know you're part of, you know, Christian and sort of the, so maybe you can expand on that if you want to talk a little bit about the background of the coaching. But what are business owners in April 2025 recognizing and feeling sort of the most jolt of a catalyst to make a change, if that question makes sense?
That's a great question. I will just backtrack a little bit. After we sold our business in 2013, I, as you say, retooled, and fast forward to 2022, I found a British guy named Christian Simpson, who had started up his own business coaching academy out of the UK. This guy's one of the leading guys in the industry to train coaches. He came from the John Maxwell organization. So I met him and John Maxwell, but then he left, started his own thing. So 2 years later, I got accredited through his coaching academy. Very strenuous, very thorough process to become a coach. So part of that program was to teach us who should we work with, develop, you know, a narrow niche and all that kind of thing. And my background being a business owner was I resonate with business people. So I've chosen, you can coach anybody, of course, but I've chosen to work with small business owners, usually 50 employees up, a couple of locations. They're either the majority shareholder or the owner. They're the ones that write the check. They're the ones that have their houses up as equity against the business. They're the ones that have signed everything they own over to the banks, and they're the ones that got assigned payroll and all that stuff. So that's the person I want to talk to. I don't want to talk to corporate people. I'm not good in the corporate space at all. It's a small business person. So what's resonating with those guys in 2025? It's the same thing that resonated with me 30 years ago and when I started selling insurance. Your business is the golden goose. It's the thing, it's your baby. It's the thing that you've started, whether it was an idea or you made a widget or a wedget, somehow you were the technician, you had an idea, you had something you could sell to the market, and you started selling it. You started making it, selling it, offering it. And time goes on, all of a sudden, you're pretty good at it. You maybe hire a couple of employees, you expand your capacity, and the journey just keeps going until finally, you know, the people I'm talking to now probably have, you know, they've had 50 plus employees, they've branched out, they've got managers, they've created a team around them, and they've increased their capacity. But a lot of them are trying to figure out during the journey, mid-journey, like, how can I elevate myself above the business to start managing it more, working on it instead of in it? And some people have a really hard time with that. So I think the biggest challenge for someone that's sort of growing a business and they're right in that sweet spot where it's growing, they've got, you know, they're excited, they got markets, they can see potential, they're maybe getting new locations, but they're often still the technician. They're often still the person who's got to touch a file or sign a check or look at an invoice or a proposal before it gets moved on. So they're often in their own way and they sort of hit that wall where they can't grow anymore because they can't duplicate themselves. They have to find a way to step aside, empower their employees, maybe find some new leadership or, you know, raise leadership within the organization, but they got to find a way to leverage their abilities and leverage their scope. So that's one of the main challenges is getting out of the business and working on it instead of in it. The other interesting thing is once people have gone through that stage and now they're maybe 20, 30 years into ownership and they're now sort of 50-ish on and they're looking down the runway going, geez, what am I going to do with this thing? Like this thing is super successful. It's, again, the golden goose that's funding my entire lifestyle. It's going to fund my retirement. It's my legacy. I don't want to sell it, or maybe I do. I just have to figure out how they're going to move from the ownership of the business to transition away from it or transition into the next part of their lives. So it's that whole thinking around sell, transition, you know, have a key employee buy in, all those types of things. Those, and they're gut-wrenching decisions because people are, they're so tied to their business. Often their identity is tied to the business. And they sometimes have to separate that out of the equation. And like, what would life look like after the fact that I'm not owning this business anymore? And for some people, that's a real problem. Like, they just are so tied to their business. But, you know, those are two of the biggest things. You know, there's always things like, should we grow? Should we buy a new location, buy a new company? Those decisions, once you have a golden goose, the golden goose often funds those next purchases. And it's relatively easy to make those decisions. It's like, it's a business decision. It's like, yes, it's worth this much. I'll pay this and I can use this money to pay that. That's often not the hard decision. It's the decision on what to do when it's all said and done. And what are we going to do with this thing? You know, and if you have partners or minor partners, or even the one I'm working with now, I have a couple of people that have their kids coming involved in the business, you know, and maybe one of the three adult children want to be involved, the other two don't. So now you're into those issues of, you know, how do I treat everybody fairly? And, you know, coaching, what I'm finding is business owners, they have a good relationship with their accountant, their lawyer, their financial planner, their friend, their brother, their sister, their wives. They can talk to everybody about parts of this, but there isn't one person who can sit down with them over, say, 90 minutes once a month that just completely focuses on that person, on the coach, and say, so what, and without any preset agenda, in a safe environment, non-judgmental, work through the issues. And the participant brings the issue topics to the sessions. And then the coach's job is to, what's your goal? What's your desired outcome? And then you actually have to work through the whole, we call it reality, like what's going on? And you got to really dig down to what the key issues are, and that sometimes you're in that space for a long time. You're trying to identify what are the key issues here, like what's holding you back. So
we work in common marketplaces with blue collar, you know, dirtier the business, and I don't mean sort of dirty like money, but like big trucks or big manufacturing, chemicals, you know, and you're dealing with business owners who come from that blue collar background. So what would you say to a blue collar person that actually gets them, let's say they've already engaged you and they're already curious. So we're not talking high level. We're kind of getting into the weeds about, you know, a first or second meeting with somebody and you ask them something or a common thing you ask right now that seems to be getting their attention to go like, I really need to, you know, the line I say is that there's no email that comes in that says stamp, you're approved to start taking 2 days off a week. It comes from within. So if you, I don't know if you want to role play or you want to like explain a past story of how that person you literally saw the light come on for them.
Yeah, that's the perfect client, to be honest, because that person, assuming that person's got an active business and it's rolling and they're just trying to figure out the next steps in their business, wherever they're at with it. But coaching really, it's all about asking questions. I would really simply ask that person, what are the top three things you want to achieve right now? Like what would, if you could wave a wand and you could achieve three things right now and you're like personal and business, what would they be? And so coaching really is just an open-ended, inquisitive, curiosity-based question, which is wide open for the person to go, okay, I have a lot of breath here. I'm going to look at everything. It's like an open-ended, it's an opportunity to speak into the main issue. And so this might help a little bit with the answer. When I coach, I come in with a blank piece of paper and I have no preset questions. I have no preset, you know, anything to present to the client. I've got nothing. What I've got is I've got the client on, and coaching is a very specific process. Like you set the, what's the topic, goal, what's your outcome today, what's the reality? And then after you go through reality, it's like, okay, what are our options here to solve this? And I spend a lot of time in the options because that's the creative part of the process where the client might say, well, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. And I'll say, what else? And then they might say, I don't know. And then I might ask a question, well, if he did know, what could it be? Well, geez. You know, and you just have to keep, it's like the unconscious mind, the answer is within. And that's the main presupposition of coaching. You have the answer, I don't. But I'm going to do my best as a coach to provide the opportunity for you to find the answer. And it really is a series of skill questions. And coaching, like I've now can talk or train to listen at a higher level, not only what you say, but maybe physiological changes, what you're doing. Like you might get excited, you might speak faster, and I'll say, what's going on now? And it might trigger some new thoughts, but it's really, I'm sort of not sure if I'm answering the question, but I would really just ask that person, what do you want? Like, what's your problem? What's your main obstacle right now? And what would you like to solve? And that just opens up that person's, you know, awareness around what they want to do. So I don't come with any sort of any preset ideas or anything.
I will shift a bit because I think you're a master at this, is when you're feeling overwhelmed, you've recently, or not, it's not so much recent anymore, but you've built this business now, you've taken the time to do all the things that, and get it going, obviously felt some sort of overwhelm or paralysis and analysis paralysis at some point. As a past athlete, current athlete, I will say, what have you done to help you figure out how to overcome that paralysis?
You know, it's funny. That's a great question. I've learned to give myself freedom to fail, freedom to, you know, we all come with preset expectations and our own ways of doing things. But I think, and you need space and time. I think if for me personally, I would just say, okay, I need some time to figure this out. So I'm just going to, and this works. So I'll give you an example. If I am working on an issue, or I will literally go for a walk. I'll go for a walk for an hour, and I'll say at the beginning of the walk, I'd like to think into this, and I'll just let my mind think into it. I'll use that space and time and exercise. But also, how many times have you woken up at 3 a.m, whatever you've been working on, that answer just appears out of nowhere? Has that ever happened to you?
Almost daily.
Right.
Yeah.
And what's happening there is when your conscious mind tells your unconscious mind, I want to solve this problem. I need to solve this problem. It could be I need to see my succession in my business, or how can I expand? Whatever the issue is, just put it in your mind. And it works on it 24/7, 365. And it starts to spit things up to the conscious mind. That's just how the unconscious mind works. And until the unconscious mind is asked to act on that, it won't, because your habits and your belief systems live in your unconscious mind. And until the conscious mind says, I want to solve this, the unconscious mind goes, okay, it's the gatekeeper that says, okay, the conscious mind is telling me to work on this. And that's what happens at 3 a.m, or if you're watching a movie or you're listening to a song, and all of a sudden, boom, that thought appears. It's because the unconscious mind is saying, okay, you asked me to solve this, so I'm going to solve it for you.
So you
and that's
do
what I try to do. Yeah.
More, it isn't meditation. It's not really manifestation, but it's using it's almost working smarter, not harder. It's like just trusting in the process.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's so intuition. What I've learned more than ever in the last few years is just trust your intuition, whatever you want to call it, your gut. Usually your intuition, I think people should never doubt their intuition. I don't think you should act on it immediately. I mean, if it's telling you to jump off a cliff, don't jump off a cliff. Put on a parachute first, you know. But your intuition is never usually wrong, but you have to think into it, right? But it sounds very airy-fairy, and the answer's within you, but I've actually been coached now for over 200 hours. I have a coach. She's in Trinidad Tobago. She's a partner of this program. So I'm a product of the product. And every time I have a coaching session, I had one this morning actually with her, and she raised some awareness on a thing I brought to the table, and it changed how I was going to approach it. And she simply kept asking. She asked me one key question that took me out of myself enough where I could look and go, you know what, I didn't think of that. And that changed my approach. So it's how it works. Yeah, it's just, you need to be open to I think coaching clients, they don't really understand coaching. Like, coaching's not mentoring. So if I'm mentoring you, Dustin, I'm going to share with you my experience on how I did things. And you are interested, but you're not going to do everything I say. And you're going to pick out what might work for you. That's mentoring, where I'm sharing. And coaching in the traditional sports sense is exactly the opposite of what coaching is from what I'm doing. It's not like go down the wing, get the puck in the center and chuck the guy, you know, like that's coaching, right? You're telling your player, stick to that player. Don't let him move, like that kind of stuff. That's sport coaching, which is what we've come to think is coaching, but it's the exact opposite. So I think in Canada, particularly in the US, coaching and human personal growth is actually a big industry down there. And in Canada, I would suggest it's not. So I'm finding in Salmon Arm, BC, I'm trying to educate people on what coaching is. So that's kind of the first thing I need to create space for people to think into if they want to be coached. Some people don't. Some people aren't ready to be coached, and some people are.
What, you bring up something that's, I'm going to ask you a good question here in a second, but the thought of, and I don't know if this is as I've gotten older, realizing that, you know, if I read a book when I was 20, It kind of was like a task, and it got put in my back pocket, and it was like, oh, I know that. And so, you know, the philosophies of that book when I'm 20, I didn't keep upgrading. And so again, now reading some of the books that I read when I was 20 and reading them with a 43-year-old with kids, with a different financial situation, different outlook on life, the books are amazing. And I see that in sort of your coaching, that just because someone had, even they got coached by you and then 5 years went by, and then, well, it's like, oh, what would Winston tell me that I already know what he's going to do? But it's not, because you're extracting. So here's my question is, what is the dumbest thing you used to think was super smart?
I love that. That's a great question.
Or said in a different way is, what's one thing that you used to kind of like really be like, this is the only way, you were kind of locked in on like this, and now you look at it and you're like, that was so dumb.
That's, you know, I'm going to answer it this way. And I've just been, this is just a reflection I had the other day, and I'm going to put it in one of my emails. So you started down a road that I'm going to go to now. So I read Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Effective Habits when I was 30. And if you know that book, the first three habits are independence, like how to become more independent. The next three habits are interdependent, how to be more effective with others. And then the seventh habit is just sharpen the saw and just be, you know, just renewal, basically. So when I read that book, 30, all I cared about was the independent things, like be proactive, begin with the end in mind, because I had nothing. We were in a bad way financially. I was grasping at straws. I needed some positive mentoring, and I didn't have any person in my life, so I was getting it through books and whatnot. So I focused on be proactive, begin with the end in mind, and all these things. I did the funeral exercise. What do I want four people to say at my funeral? Like I did that. I created my own mission statement, like my personal mission statement. Here I am at 30, because I was grasping for straws. Now, that book, I'm rereading it, to your point, and now the second set of habits, like the interdependence, think win-win, seek to understand before you understood, those are the parts of the book that are resonating with me. It's like the other habits, like the independent habits, like I'm not interested anymore in that. I'm not saying I've mastered them, but now I'm more focused on how can I be a bit more effective with other people. Hey, Stephen Covey died 30 years ago. The book hasn't changed. I've changed. And, you know, so.
You telling me that is like when people always say, oh, you know, have you read Seven Habits? It's like, yeah, I have, but I read it 20 some years ago. So I'm guilty too. So thanks for that reminder.
The other book I'm reading is Think and Grow Rich. Now that book, just by its title, you think, oh God, but that book is absolutely amazing. And the habits that resonated with me 25, 30 years ago were desire and think it and you can believe it, all those things. I was just like, okay, I'm going to do this because I got no other choice. And now I'm more interested in mastermind and those types of things. Again, working how to be more effective with other people. Same book. The guy died 70 years ago.
Yeah. Right? I read that book 20 years ago, and it has the whole section on sexual transmutation, where you know, your desire for being in the nightclubs and doing all that stuff is going to go down, and you're going to shift to, you know, I remember thinking, I never want this to end. You know why? And now being a young 40-year-old with a family and a wife I love, it is a powerful thing to start, having maturity and different visions to really generate results, which leads me to which small, strange behavior has produced outsized results in your life?
Well, I wouldn't call it small, but So I just wrote about yesterday. I have 25 of these. It's a five-section notebook. And I divide it into, you know, personal fitness and business and community and stuff. But the one thing in that book I've done for 20 years, and it just floored me the other day, is I have a parking lot for ideas. So if you and I are talking and you say, have you ever thought of this? And I said, geez, that might work for me. I don't know how. So I write it down. I park it and I have this parking lot. And every year I would look at my parking lot and go, do I want this? Does it resonate anymore? Do I need it? Or do I get rid of it? And that was kind of my filtering. And that process, like I had a Samsung phone, and I used to put them on my phone. So 8 years later, I go to iPhone, I get an iPhone. You can't transfer your notes. So I literally had to go through all my notes to make sure. I had 682 notes on my Samsung. And of them, about 50 of them were like, wow, I can't believe I missed this. Like I can use this today. I can use it in a part. So that process, that's the smallest thing maybe, but it's been huge because I don't miss things. And then I have a chance to reflect on them. So
Well, I think that's a good trait to have. Rich Barton, I don't know if you're familiar with that name, but he was the founder of Expedia, and then he went on to found Zillow. And Zillow, which is the online marketplace for real estate in the U.S., he worked in Microsoft originally. That's where he was under Bill Gates and then the engineering department. But he talked about that and literally going back in his, you know, he didn't call it a parking lot, but the ideas. And once he sold Expedia, that, you know, they had money and connections. It was like, well, what else do we want to do? We don't want to be retired yet. We're still only like 35 or whatever it was. And they started going through ideas and going through their parking lot, and out came Zillow, which was somebody at a long time ago had said, what about an online marketplace for real estate? So whatever your thing is, I've used Evernote in the past. I do struggle a little bit because I do use the Notes app on my iPhone, which doesn't go to my Surface that I have, where Evernote is on my desktop and on my phone. Yeah, so I'm super guilty of emailing myself.
So, I do too.
Yeah.
I did too. Cool. I mean, honestly, yeah.
And just batch it. So what are you most excited about right now? I know we've heard and felt a lot of excitement, but I love how you called it sharpening your saw. Right now you are getting a little bit, you know, some people might say dangerously good at something. You know, what is sort of at the forefront of like what you're doing with your craft right now of coaching?
Oh, thanks for asking. So I've done one-to-one coaching with clients the last couple of years. And again, I've been doing that gradually and learning the craft and working with organic clients in Salmon Arm now. So I've got clients here. Where I'm getting excited is the mastermind concept. And that sounds so airy-fairy from the Napoleon Hill world, but really it's a very structured process where I will soon be looking for groups of four individuals that are compatible. And it's a very structured sort of annual planning process split into quarters. And I look forward to developing those groups. And literally what they are really is in one quarter, you'll have a day face-to-face with everybody. And each person will have, say, an hour to present their information to the other three. And we feed into that person. And then you basically just rotate times four for that day. And then you have a one-to-one coaching session on top of that per month with each of those four people. And then months two and three, it's just a Zoom 2-hour call to check in with everybody in group, but then one-to-one coaching in months two and three. So that process, it's going to allow me to scale up. It's going to allow me to do one-to-one coaching, but it's going to, in a group form, in the mastermind concept form, it's very powerful because you get by giving, and someone else's concern or what they're working on is awfully similar to yours. They're going to be business owners. So it's going to be sort of compatible people in like they're running businesses. That's their commonality. It won't be people in the same industry. So there's no competition in the room. It has to be safe and confidential. But I'm really excited about that. I actually see that getting to the point where I could have five or six masterminds running. And if they're done right and there's value, they don't end. Like they could go years past. It's not a 1-year contract type of thing, because people will see the value of that. So I'm excited about that. That's where I believe I'll be in about a year's time. I hope to have two or three of those set up.
What did you find by going through the mastermind process with Christian?
So it's 360 learning. You get the chance for people to pour into you when you put your topic on the table, and then you pour into other people when their topic's on the table, and then you get critiqued when they're pouring into you. So you're giving feedback and you're receiving feedback, and it's the combination is really powerful. And it's a real rapid spiral up where everybody starts to become more aware, conscious of what they're doing. They get more focused. And the biggest part of coaching that I haven't talked about is the accountability side. Like when you talk to a group of four people and you say, here's my three or four options I'm going to take forward, then you've become accountable to those actions to yourself. But the other members will ask you the next time you sit down, oh, how'd those go? And that process is really powerful because you know how if you left to your own, and when you try to coach yourself, we all have blind spots. Like you just can't, if you're in the picture, you can't see the frame, right? You just cannot get past. But when someone asks a question, that's sort of a third party looking at what you're talking about. Often that releases a new way of thinking or a new idea. So it's very powerful. And my experience with masterminds is that the growth is rapid. And you also develop a really good relationship with the participants, with your co-coaches, in my case, coaches. Mm-hmm. So it's been good.
Yeah, I found one thing that I would say that some people might say is, well, should I be masterminding with other experts in my industry? And I want to mastermind with people who are leveled up than me. You know, these are some things that over the years you kind of look at. And one of the things that I would, from personal experience, would be making a big shift in business, or when I made a big shift in business in our mastermind group, it was one of the individuals that was in the group that was a tech person. And so he was not in my business, but I knew he was one of the most conservative people in our group. And so when we all went around the table and we were all, you know, pouring into sort of the situation I was in, this, and you know, when everyone was saying, I think you should do this, I think you should do this, yeah. And then even this was that, yeah, I think all the ducks are in a row. And it was like a light bulb went off that I didn't need any more analysis. If this individual was saying, okay, I knew it was okay, how much more do you need to make this decision? And so having that sort of group around you is extremely empowering. And there's all your resources on your website, which we'll have, you know, a link at the end. But just even looking up Napoleon Hill mastermind concept is a great start if someone is looking to try and understand that, you know, different, you know, that value it does provide. So thank you for bringing it up. I do have a closing wealth lifestyle question for you. What expensive thing do you do regularly that most people would call irresponsible, but you know is part of, you know, your bigger picture that fulfills you?
Oh man. Well, I have to say this coaching academy that I, and you know, you've just done strategic coaching. I'm going to hit a chord here, but I have invested enormous amounts of money in the academy in my, so his annual, I call him CE credit dues, like to be in his world, it's an enormous amount of money. I don't debate it. I have created a whole new community around me, and I'm the only Canadian in the program, by the way. So the person I was on the phone with this morning was in Alabama. Yesterday I talked to my buddy in Arkansas. My coach is in Trinidad Tobago. I've just developed this really close network of friends, and we meet once a year. We flew to England a few times. We went to Texas last year, and it's just a whole new community of similar minded people. And what I'm spending on that and what I'm making out of it currently, because I'm going slow and steady, is you could call that irresponsible. But I'm loving every second of it. So,
but I think what's important is you're the one that's in control. You're the one that's feeling it and experiencing it. So I think that transposes to the rest of the world. When someone owns certain things or buys certain things, they, you know, there's probably a select people that buy stuff just to keep up with the Joneses. I think that is a real thing. But at the same time, there is more to, at a certain point in life, you have a certain sense of security and you've got your certain nest egg and you've got this thing called time, and you don't want to be, you know, you've identified, you don't want to be retired and just stick your feet up and drink beers every day and play tennis. So this is purposeful. It provides connections. And I did have one guy, I don't know if you ever met him through our family, was Danny Hooper. And he was, yeah. So he had this thing, and I wrote it in my journal this morning, which was SPF. So I think I'm going to change it to be SPF 10X. So, you know, like sunscreen, but it's simple is S, profitable, and fun. Yeah. Those three things, if an endeavor has those three things, or at least two with probability of profit, yeah. If you got simple and fun and a potential for profit, then go after it and do it. Because if not now, when?
Well, I qualify for that. Yeah. I mean, the whole financial part of this was what I know for sure. Different words, law of compensation, whatever. What it means basically is if you provide value to people, you will get paid. Don't worry about it. Just keep going. And that's, I've never worried about the financial side of this thing. I know as I get better and I put myself in the right rooms with the right people, I'll get paid. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. Is there any final thoughts that you want to share with the listener to help them on their journey to make a change, to take a different path, to level up, whatever it means? Is there any final thoughts that you want to share with people?
Yeah, actually, it's a really interesting exercise I've gone through recently, but the whole values exercise. So if you could identify your top three values, and I went through an extensive process to do that, not only will that highlight previous decisions that were either good or bad, and you'll know why, because you were living congruently or incongruently, but if you know your top values, your future decisions are a lot easier when you know that even value 2 is more important than 3 by a sliver, but it's enough to skew the decision. So mine ended up being integrity and independence and truth. And independence always wins over other decisions. Like, that's so critical to me. So everything I've ever done, and it turns out that was my overriding value all my life. So it makes sense. And I learned that late in life, right? So I wish I'd known that earlier. But that's just, if you can kind of identify your key values, they'll drive every decision you make.
Any other tools up in the last, you know, again, you've been working at this new you in business for the last few years. So any other tools, like I was thinking personality profiles or along the same lines as what you just described, that helped you get clear or helped you have a little bit more conviction to get you through maybe a dip?
Yeah, it's really amazing you asked that. So John Maxwell Organization, I'm a member of that, have been for many years, but I'm not active there. But they have a DISC, it's called DISC. It's a profiling thing that I'm accredited to use. And it's simply a series of questions people answer, and then it kicks out their basically what the kind of profile they're, psychology. So DISC is dominant, you know, compatible, what's synergistic, and then what's the I is, anyways, the guy in the room that everyone notices, right? The I is incoming. But anyways, that profound system has actually helped me. It actually kicked out a few things. It showed me how I act when I'm under tension. So I didn't realize that I have a certain profile, but when I under tension, I go to a different type of personality to get through that situation. And I go back to my sort of non-tension, the normal personality trait. So that was really helpful. And that's part of the coaching process. I actually do a DISC with everybody before we start the process. It's just a great, it doesn't drive the coaching process, but it's more awareness and information for the client to go, oh, wow, I'm a motivator or I'm a leader. Because that profiling system kicks out a kind of a category what you are, but then it speaks into some of your high points and low points on the graph. So it's actually very specific to you. But that's one tool I use. And the other thing is a wheel of life, the old good old wheel of life, you know, divide a wheel in 8 parts and family, business, community, financial, whatever key categories. And then from this middle of the circle out, you know, 0 to 10. So 10 is on the edge of the circle. And once you do the plots, just join the lines. And quite often you'll see where your wheel is unbalanced. And that's actually, I use that also before coaching to identify the areas of someone's life that they want to work on or what they want to work on. It'll show someone like, geez, I'm really weak on the whatever side, like I'm not spending enough time with my spouse, or I'm really weak on the community side, or I'm not doing anything with friends, you know, that kind of thing. And then that's often that's actually a clue for what you want to start working on. So those are two really simple, good tools. And then we do the values work in coaching. At somewhere during the process, I like to, it's a session unto itself, and it's a series of pretty heavy questions that kick out values that then we play the values off head to head in like an hour and a half, 2 hour session. If you have 25 values, I'll literally say independence over loyalty. And you'll say loyalty, like you did. So it's a process that you go through, and then you eventually whittle down to the top 5. So that's a really valuable exercise that everybody seems to love.
Yeah. What would you say to people who are like, I don't want to do your assessment shit? Like I like to use them. I've used numerous other ones as well. And sometimes with staff, you might have low adoption, or you want to they're like, oh, you really like that stuff, eh? But I think it's important to know where you are. And of course, you're just like, oh, I know my personality. I am myself. Well, why wouldn't I know that? What would you say to someone that's like, I don't believe in that shit?
Yeah, it's actually, it's just so how do you feel about personal growth? How do you feel about where you are now versus where you want to be? And I think, you know, that's actually, so before I coach somebody, I actually have a half hour, I call it assessment call. And those are exactly the questions I ask. Like, so how do you feel about personal growth? And what are you prepared to do to change some of the things that you want to change? And, you know, you unearth whether they're actually going to be active participants in the process. Because I won't coach anyone that doesn't want to be coached. That's just a complete waste of time. But to your question about someone that doesn't want to do one of the assessment tools, I don't hinge coaching on the assessment tool. I'd say, well, I would try to get them to do it and say, it's awareness, it's information, you could put it away, it's yours, and it could trigger some thinking in terms of what you want to bring to coaching. But I don't get hung up on that. But it raises a question, like, if you're not into that, then what are you into? Like, tell me what else you might not be into. Yeah. Because it's torture for both parties to try to coach if the participant doesn't want to coach. And so I try to unearth that before we get started.
That's what I was trying to go to, was the person is listening and they want to know if they're, you know, they're listening and they're like, oh, that's good information, but, you know, I'm either don't need to be coached, or, you know, I do need to be coached, and I do need to, you know, paradigm shift my thinking that I've seen coaching costs before, and whoa, those are expensive, and I'm not going to get any value. Because there is a bit of that around where you have, oh, like, what am I really going to get? You're going to talk to me and I'm going to pay you this much money, or what I, you know, you mentioned strategic coach. I fly to Toronto once every 3 months and it's X amount for one day of meetings. It's like, yeah, it is valuable. So how do we give the listener a kind of a hook to know that they are ready, or it's time to maybe get some coaching?
I would just ask the person, like I mentioned before, what are the top three things you want to achieve in your life? What are the obstacles you're facing? And if you don't take part of the coaching, how will you go about solving those problems? And they may say, well, I have a resource or whatever. And I mean, that's great. I'm not trying to catch them on the answer. It's like, if you truly believe you can make some headway without coaching, that's great. But, you know, we can self-coach to a point, but when you're in the picture, it's hard to see the frame. And so many times, I'll share one last story with you if I can. Is that
sure?
You have time?
Yep. Yep.
So in the program, I'm coaching colleagues. So I coached probably the most senior coach in our academy. She's a 25-year coaching vet. She coaches 500, you know, Fortune 500 companies in the U.S. And she was my partner in the program. She was about to have a meeting with her key employee. So she brought that as a topic to the session. And the key employee happens to be her brother. So she's worked with her brother for a long time. There's always been tension, the brother-sister thing. But so she was going to have a huge meeting with him about, you know, his role in the company, how he was starting to act to ownership. Why, like, he didn't have any ownership in the company. He was just one of the managers, but he was starting to act like he owned the company, these types of things. And she wanted to have a meeting with him about that. So she was discussing how she was going to set this meeting up. And then a question came to me and I said, well, who's running this meeting? Is it big sister, or is it owner, company owner, or big sister? And there was a silence for about 45 seconds. And she said, holy shit, I've been running this company like he's my brother. I've been treating him like my brother. And she said, I have to treat him like an employee. Now, this is a woman who's one of the most aware women I know. Like, she's very high end, very bright lady. And it was like, she didn't realize she'd been treating him like a little brother the whole time he worked for her. So she, long story short, she changed the agenda of the meeting. We were actually, for the rest of our time, we worked out what she was going to do and talk about. And I got an email a couple of days later, and she said it was a great meeting. And his comment to her was, this is the first time you've ever treated me like an employee.
Wow.
When you're in the picture, you don't see the frame, right? And that's like, we can self-coach to a point. And she had tried to self-coach herself through this situation. She thought she had it all the way through. I've got this. But it was, you know, it was just a simple, it was a third party looking at it slightly different. It was a different question, and it nailed her.
Yeah.
So I think if people are trying to, it's the difference between the performance gap. It's between what you're doing and what your potential is, right? So how do you connect those two? And coaching is probably the most transformational process I've ever seen. I've been part of it. I've experienced it. I'm working with people, and it's feedback I'm getting. But the person has to be ready for it. They have to go all in. They can't, like one guy said to me, just give me the answer. And I said, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. So if people are looking for a quick fix, I'm not the guy. But if they truly are going to dig in, and personal growth is the hardest work there is. Like, it's super hard work. It's frustrating.
Well, you're hard work. You're vulnerable. You're, you know, and you got to think in places and take time to take a breath and just sit there and just embrace the question and not, and I'm definitely not the expert person, but I think we go through and you read all these things. You're like, we talked from the start. I got that figured out. But really, it's an evolution. And this podcast for me is an evolution of bringing together people and re-engaging my own brain. So thank you for getting that fired up today. Where can people find you, Winston?
WPCoachingServices.ca. It's a website. It's skewed to working with business owners. And throughout the website, if anyone ever wants to reach out for a half hour chat, would love to do that. Really, it's one-to-one coaching. And then the group coaching is evolving. And I'm about to start looking at ways to, you know, people don't want to go to one-on-one coaching because they may not know enough about it. There's going to be some sort of maybe one off the cuff coaching session with a DISC report, for just so they get a taste of it. So I'm about to go down that road, and I'll But really, the starting point for me right now, if anyone was interested, just chat for a half hour. You see what you get. Just me here, and you know, we can make some decisions after that in terms of what they might want to do. But the one to two session with a DISC report is probably going to be pretty successful, because then they'll experience coaching.
Well, Winston, this was super special for me. So thank you for coming on the show today and sharing your wisdom.
Thank you. And congrats on all your success. It's awesome. Thanks, Dustin.